Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to The Fringe Journal. Sammy's Story 8. Our presidential candidate stands on the podium and says something about, "Ask not what your country," and we're already paying attention to who said it first, and not so much to the person who's saying the words now. The speaker is not John F. Kennedy, but that's who comes to mind since he did say the words first. So, the people who look at the presidential candidate now see that there is something that is standing outside the frame, not really referred to in his speech, but alluded to, whether or not he likes it. The referent has been dislocated. This is to say that whatever it was supposed to mean is only approachable indirectly. You have to move into it obliquely. Derrida suggests that the speaker just undermined his own message. The ruptured signifier sets off a chain reaction, meanings that swirl around a center, and an echo of previous words and speeches. My son's beagle, Sammy, growls gently at my feet. Sammy looks at me. Sammy speaks. Who cares about subtly communicating that you're all about power? Isn't it better to transmit a message of coolness, truth, celebrity, or some other ethos designed to spur sales? We are approaching a campaign year, and I thought it would be fun to construct my own charismatic candidate, whom I'll care not to name after the recently vilified characters. But how do you groom a candidate for office? Okay, I have to admit, I'm fascinated by the spin-generating tactics of the late Lee Atwater and of Karl Rove, although I think that Rove is not quite as interesting as Atwater. Atwater was a true genius. I won't go into it now, but I encourage you to research him on the internet. So, let's assemble a speech for our guy or girl, female, presidential candidate. So, here are the things that we need to include. Let's include snippets of famous speeches. We can also include allusions to literary heroes. We can also make references to famous battles or historical events or even literary events. If we want to take it further, we can set up an entire economy of meaning. We'll put our candidate in contexts that communicate power with all the nonverbal, non-textual signifiers set on high. We'll arrange lighting, colors, backdrops, props to resonate power. I disagree with the dog. Hey, Sammy, is it possible to be too obvious? Sammy shakes his collar, nips at a flea. Then he responds. I read it in his eyes. Well, sometimes you can be too obvious. But, you know, the more obvious and artless we are, sometimes the better. People see what you're doing and they grasp it within a nanosecond. If you're transparent in your tactics, you'll seem somehow honest and somehow not deceptive. So moving on from Derrida, to plan the perfect presidential speech, I'd employ some ideas from Roland Barthes in his book, Image, Music, Text. Barthes pointed out that language creates the ability for us to talk about past, present, and future at the same time. We almost feel as though we experience the past or the future, even though we know that is impossible. But we can imagine it, and we can conceptualize the past and the future thanks to language. So here I cut in. Sammy, how are all those things going to help our political candidate? Sammy lets out a low moan of exasperation. By creating the maximum amount of resonance with past, present, and future, we will enter into a temporary state of pleasure, which Barthes calls jouissance, a fleeting joy, a platonic moment of unity. These are possible if our candidate talks about heroes or a mythical character whose attributes slip back and forth between the past, present, and future. Pretty exciting. And I kind of have to say that it's nice to imagine this for a presidential candidate. Could happen. But, hey, our politicians are probably not likely to listen to an advisor who's a dog. So, well, Sammy, you'll just have to keep your little ideas to yourself, and I will stop trying to patronize you. So, here we are, Sammy the Beagle and myself contemplating presidential rhetoric. Thanks for listening. This is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to The Fringe Journal.